I want us to turn our attention to somebody who's popped in all the way from beautiful Cape Town to see us, but he's no stranger to Johannesburg. The founder and executive chairman of MNC Saatchi Able, which is a marketing and advertising group for the Africa region. Non-executive chairman, Irish-based innovative AI research firm, Sens. Amazing. Amazing that you could find some time to be with us. Mike Able, how nice to see you. And thank you for coming, by the way. Thank you. Thank
Which
you.
Is a, it's a lot for a Cape Townian to be up and dressed up and
don't give
in
him
the studio at this time of the morning.
It
well
sure
done
is.
To you.
It's great to be here.
Don't
you.
Give him a hard time about being Cape Townian. No, Mike, it's really nice to talk to you. I mean, you're a legendary ad man, but there's so much more that we want to talk to you about. And I'm curious about, you know, your book, which the last time we had you on, we were doing something to do with like who we really are as South Africans.
Yeah.
And we've had a bumpy road the last couple of years.
Sure have.
But you've written this book called Willing and Able, which I thought was really interesting, and it was timeous, and I think it helped a lot of South Africans to kind of figure out where they are in the current mess or opportunity that we're in. And you said it, the subtitle was Lessons from a Decade in Crisis. So for people who haven't read the book and where your thoughts are now, add the new chapter that you've probably been working on in your head, but also tell us what the book was about and why you brought it out at that time, because I think it's a good place to start.
Fantastic. Thanks. So I came back from running the MNC Saatchi Group in Australia towards the end of 2009. I had co-led the Ogilvy Group prior to going to Australia. And when I got back, there was enormous excitement in the country around the World Cup that was coming up and so much hope for the country, albeit obviously that we had the Zuma presidency, if you can call it that, at the time. And I started my company from scratch, in a downturned economy, in an overtraded market. And I believed in South Africa. I believed in the economy. I thought I was going to be able to create something, and we have. But I guess what I wanted to do was to capture not just the successes, but the trials and tribulations, I guess, in starting a company from scratch.
Sure.
In believing that there is still great opportunity to do something meaningful in South Africa, because aside from the Rugby World Cup, people were down. At the time, we had load shedding. Fortunately, scrap that.
Yeah, Pumi got home to it last night and woke up to it this morning, so did I. You? So yeah.
Oh, no. And we had corruption at the... Okay, well, scrap that. We had So basically, the picture I'm painting is that for the last... Well, I've been back 14 years now, and the problems that we encountered then are the same problems we have now. Mm. And yet people have muddled on with their lives. Some people have built fantastic companies. You know, kids have got great educations, albeit obviously the massive challenges in education. So I really wanted to bring a bit of perspective to it in terms of there is always an opportunity to make something, to create something, to grow something, if you lean into the positive. And I guess what we're seeing right now is the last 5 years, let's say, or going on six, so much unfulfilled hope and so much unfulfilled promise in the country. And yet all of our underlying assets remain exactly the same. I mean, this is a country waiting to boom. This is a country waiting to give employment to the 50% youth that don't currently have employment. And it's all solvable. It just needs the right people to solve that problem or to want to solve the problem. I think more is the point.
That's exactly what we need to hear this morning, because there are plenty of us who are, we can so easily be pulled into the negative.
Yeah.
And look, there's a difference between being sensible and realistic.
Yeah.
And not hiding your head in the sand when you see bad things or pretending everything's going to be all right and whistling past the graveyard. But the only people who make the world better are the optimists, because if we just listened to the pessimists, we would have no reason to carry on. We'd all just be mired in depression. So you want to get things done. You want to make your 100%. Life better. You want to make the world better. You have to be a little bit optimistic. And what I like about people like you, and there are few and far between, I'm afraid, is that you give us that renewed sense of hope, and we've got to keep believing in ourselves. If we don't, who the hell else will?
Yes, well, I mean, all innovation comes out of a problem.
Sure.
So anything new, anything fresh that is born is the product of a problem. And so if you run towards the problem, you can solve that problem. If you run away from it, it's going to chase you like a bully and it's going to beat you. And so if we focus on our problems and we run towards them collectively, and that is a big problem in our country, I guess, is that we run at things not collectively. Yeah. So we are so divided and so split in how we come at problem solving. And if we just put differences aside, and there's far more that unites South Africans than divides them. So if we could just focus on what unites us, our wanting to educate our children, our wanting to have great healthcare, our wanting to have jobs, our wanting to iron out corruption or gender-based violence or crime, we'll solve those things. But it's like the Tower of Babel. You know, we all seem to be divided around things. So hopefully South Africans will start coming together to solve problems, and we are great problem solvers.
Mm. Yeah, there's a resilience that's also our biggest enemy in some ways, right, Kums?
It absolutely is. But, you know, when you talk about a country waiting to boom and so much unfulfilled potential, for you having come back and then built the business, because it was a big business.
Yeah.
When you arrived, I remember being in advertising. Yes. I remember a quote in, I think, Financial Mail or something saying that, you know, you've built a runway.
Yes.
A big runway, and you want to land big jets.
Yes.
Do you think we still, and having come from Ogilvy, do we still have big jets to land on this runway here in South Africa? Because we don't have brands of our own anymore.
Yeah.
Even SAB.
That's an interesting question.
Even SAB doesn't, you know, it's now in
this. Yes. Yes. Well, we certainly do have brands of our own. If you have a look at certainly the largest client in my group is Standard Bank, the largest bank on the African continent, and a South African brand. You know, if you have a look at probably one of the most famous advertising brands, if not the most famous that we have in our stable, is Nando's, you know, a great South African brand that has gone on to conquer the world. So I think that when you look around, in certainly in terms of the telco space, and you look at the size and the scale of an MTN, and you have a look at our banking and various industries, absolutely we do. But where you are right is I don't think that people are investing enough in building homegrown companies. And we have astonishing companies in South Africa, from South Africa. You look at Discovery, look at Vitality. This is a country that innovates for me to such an extent that if there is a lack of belief, we need to find a way of engaging in a conversation to rebuild that belief. I strongly feel that. And the reason I say that is nothing has really changed in the country other than our attitude. Yes, our debt to GDP ratio has grown. But if you look at the situation we have been in as a country, certainly since 2008, what has really improved? You know, what has really gotten better? You know, there was state capture. Some people say we still have state capture in one shape or another. Yes, the Guptas are gone, but, you know, how many people are in orange jumpsuits as a result?
How many are still on the list that the ANC submitted last week?
Well, there you go. But if you have a look at the underlying potential, what do we have? So let me unpack it for you a bit. We have world-leading agri right here in South Africa. We have world-leading banking, telecommunications, tourism, the creative industry. Here we are sitting in a world-class facility that you guys run, and we have freedom of speech, which allows you to do what you do every day.
Thank God for
exactly,
that.
Exactly, one of the last bastions. So I think that if you have a look at potential and what you can build, you always have to look at the underlying assets. And our underlying assets are profound. We're just not harnessing them correctly. And we also need to challenge government in terms of unnecessary bureaucracy, red tape, the stuff that actually holds us back, so that we do become much more investment friendly.
So I want to talk to you about something that you dropped into conversation yesterday. I hope I'm not jumping the gun here, but you also believe that mentorship is an important part of what the economy needs to be doing to feed back into itself to grow.
Yes.
And young people in this country may have, they may be in the lucky 40% who've got an opportunity to learn somewhere, to take on a small salary that maybe pays just their transport costs, but they can get in and start learning and have an internship and get ahead.
Yeah.
But mentoring, for those who have been in business for some time and people with the amount of experience that you have, is probably one of the most important pillars that will help these people to get ahead.
Yes.
Young, talented, hungry people in South Africa who are desperate for that opportunity. But once they've got it, they get abandoned again.
Mm.
And they just have to kind of feel their way in the dark.
Yes.
Before they realize whether they're any good or not at something. So mentorship, let's talk about that for a second.
Well, I think there's active mentorship and I think there's passive mentorship. And so the big reason why I started my podcast,
Yes, it started last week.
Last week, correct, which is again called Willing and Able.
Welcome to the podcast world.
Thank you. Good to be here. was because I realized that I was and am at such an advantage in growing up as I did by having really smart, cultured, interested, good parents and grandparents. And what I used to pick up from them and their friends simply sitting around the dinner table, be it around medicine, because my grandfather was a medical man, be it around business, because my parents were business people, or academia, because my mom was an academic, or whatever it might be, I had all of this amazing and rich conversation. And so I thought to myself, because I've encountered it in business, you know, I employ many hundred people. And I think that a lot of people have got great educations, perhaps, but don't get exposed to that level of conversation. So what I wanted to do was to create a passive form of mentorship where I would have fantastic, rich, varied conversations with multiple South Africans. That if you're listening to podcasts, the whole thing is about educating and dropping wisdom, so that throughout the conversation, people would be saying, aha, yes, I never thought about that. Maybe I could solve the problem this way or that way. Then there is, as you say, all of this experience that is out in South Africa. Now, people are forced to retire today because the world is ageist, somewhere between 60 and 65. Those people are mentally vital and they are physically vital and they are able to add so much value. So there is such an opportunity to unlock this dormant potential in South Africa where through online platforms and other ways of doing it, we can actually start engaging in active mentorship in South Africa. And that is something that I'm looking at very seriously right now. Because what have you got? You've got the 65-year-old who's run a company and now he's sitting at home or she's sitting at home trying to work out how to fill their day where they're these hungry and desperate minds on the other side waiting just to absorb all of this. And I think that if we can get behind mentorship as a country, you know, they say a rising tide raises all ships, and we can raise the country's ships. And I think that that is something that we should look at. I mean, one of the other ideas I've had for years and years is, I've always wondered why, because we have a problem with orphans in our country insofar as these children are brought up or dropped off or can't be raised because of poverty in an orphanage. And then 100 meters down the road or 200 meters, you've got an old age home and those people are lonely and they are forgotten. And I think that when you look at combinations, why don't you build an orphanage together with an old age home? Because what you've then got is a sharing of needs and love, where old people love young kids and love pouring, you know, attention and affection and values and guidance. Because to be honest with you, most of these unbelievable values that we have in our country are from the older generation that are passed down. Mm-hmm. And these kids are just hungry. They're like birds with their mouths open, their beaks open, waiting for love, attention. So I think that if we start looking at problem solving entirely differently, but dare I say logically, we could come to fascinating new models.
I like it. I like it very much. All right.
It's election year.
Yeah, I knew you were going to go here.
Oh, 75 days away, I think, sure. More or less. And it would be having a marketing man in studio and not having a conversation about the campaigns would be a missed opportunity.
Sure.
I know you're involved with one, but I'm still going to ask you with the campaign, very subdued election because in advertising, this time of year, this time of season is very, very big because campaigns are coming out, people are putting out messaging or should be.
Yeah.
But this year, for some reason, it seems to be very subdued. Other than a poster with the person's face, head and shoulders, there's very little of it happening. What do you make of why that is?
Well, I think a lot of political parties obviously have limited resources and have not wanted to, I guess, use their gunpowder ahead of announcing an election date. And I think that a lot of them have gone from a phase of awareness, because we have a lot of new parties in South Africa, almost too many new parties, to be honest, but competition is always good, I guess, to now an election campaign. And I think that we're going to see that transition kick in now, Pumi. I think people are now going to start saying, well, we've got a short, finite period of time, and best we get out there and we start telling people what we stand for. Because, historically, as you know, political parties are great at telling you how useless the other parties are in their own campaigns, as opposed to telling you what they actually stand for. They are not benefit-led, you know. A lot of them are lie-led. We managed to fool you into voting for us last time because we promised you all of the stuff. We know we haven't delivered it. We want you to forget about it, but hey, vote for us again. And I think that this time there's formidable competition from a lot of credible players, from a lot of people that have got established corporate histories that are entering politics to try and help the country, or former politicians that belong to other parties, you know, that are now in new parties. Some of them good, some of them absolutely dreadful.
Well, we'll speak to the first breakaway from the ANC.
Yes,
Bantiwala
Musa. Very first one.
In just a short while.
Second after the PAC.
Oh, that's true. But I mean, we're talking post-94. Sure. You want to be, I get you, historically accurate.
Give
Robert Sobukwe his due. But Mike, who are you talking about and who are you watching most carefully?
So if you look at the latest polling, I don't think that it is entirely representative, by nature of polling as well, of what is likely to shake out. I mean, what we are seeing for the first time, and it is absolutely certain, is that the ANC has lost a lot of ground. And then when you look at it on a regional basis, you know, there's obviously the entrant of our former president, and what that's going to do in terms of disrupting KZN is going to be dramatic for the ANC specifically. But when you look at new parties, for example, like Arise Mzansi, when you look at people like Musi Maimane with Bosa, when you look at Gate McKenzie, if you like, with Patriotic Alliance, there are these guys that are coming up and that are out there and are in the field. And Songezo Zibi's Arise Mzansi, as I mentioned before, is one of those where they have considerable, you know, ground campaigns. They're out there, they're talking to people, they have something compelling that they're offering. Herman Mashaba's action essay. All of these are very viable new competitors that people sit up and take note. And then you've got the DA, of course.
But before you go into the DA, a lot of people just dismiss these small parties and they say, well, they don't really have a role to play. They might be a kingmaker in a certain municipality.
Correct.
But generally they're outside the tent, and actually people should be talked out of voting for them.
Yes.
Because why waste in inverted commas? I'm not saying this is true. This is the devil's advocate.
That thought process was pioneered by a single particular individual whom I will not name because I get so much flack for calling their shit out. But anyway.
So you obviously don't believe that. And, you know, again, I heard the argument the other day from someone who I think is very wise about these things, said that we are a country that's extraordinarily diverse. Obviously, we need as many options as possible. People can't even decide in this country what flavor of chips we want on the shelf.
We just want tomato sauce. Okay, sorry.
But well, but there was a huge fight about this. I mean, we even came up on the show on Friday with Simpy Wen. So, of course, we want lots of options. It's not a bad thing. And if you want to vote for a little party, you're going to the polls. You're voting. Of course, it counts.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, you look at the ACDP. I mean, they're a small party, and I think they play a very valuable role, often as being, in my view, a moral barometer and voice in our country. Mm-hmm. So I don't believe that at all. You know, when I see the Reverend Kenneth stand up and talk, or a Steve Swart, I listen to what they have to say. Mm-hmm. You know, the same with, you know, I think they've made a huge transition. I would have never historically spoken about the Freedom Front in an environment like that. But when you hear that, you know, the Corneille Mulders and what they're saying, they speak a lot of sense.
I mean, we had him in here when they were starting the multi-party charter. Yeah. And I was like, there's an adult in the room.
Correct.
That's true.
That guy knows what he's talking about. And every time I've spoken to Corneille Mulders since then, I've thought, this guy
Why aren't we listening to him more?
And what we've been sold about him is actually nowhere near the truth. He's like putting the stupid kids' heads together and saying, you've got to make this work.
Correct.
I'm with you.
And so when you look at that, so where are we going? We are obviously going into a coalition government.
Yeah,
that is clear. You look at it and you think, okay, well, who are these coalitions going to be with? Is it going to be with a dominant opposition party, or is it going to be with a combination of sorts of these smaller parties? And I think that makes it very, very exciting, because what you do have for the first time in three decades is an opportunity for change. Now, you're not going to find more of a juggling band than me when it comes to Madiba, or when it comes to, you know, the Oliver Tambos of this world and the Walter Sisulus and, you know, those great icons and legends. But those days are long past. I think what South Africa needs is the values that those people represented. But certainly in terms of new opportunities, you've got to look at who represents the values that I'm looking for. And that's not a party. A party is an inanimate object. It's people.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you have a look at a lot of these people, and I think that is where a guy like a Sonkezo Zibi gets a lot of traction, because people say, I've read his book, Manifesto, and I've read his other book, and I believe that this is a good guy. And I think there are quite a lot of good guys out there. And if they had to get together and become part of that coalition, and I think it's also a longer game. I think 2024 is the lead up to 2029.
Nice.
And but I think we're going to see sizable change here. I do think so. We're going to obviously see the usual players still at the table. There's no question about that. But those smaller parties, everything, you know, a tree, a redwood tree, a sequoia, starts off as a seed or a nut, or whatever it might be, that grows this thing.
We don't have 900 years.
So
a beanstalk.
Because you've spoken about Sonkezo and Rise Mzansi, and and elections are also all about slogans and sloganeering.
Yeah.
You know where this is going. 2024 is our 1994.
Yes.
Right? When I first saw it, it was with Rise Mzansi. And I since know that it was a young man who was a t-shirt, all of that, which is a wonderful story.
It's their trademarked slogan.
It's trademarked. Do the EFF know that?
Yeah, because
I think they've been told. Does it make a difference?
Well, because I mean, that hashtag on social media has really gained quite a lot of traction well. And in no small part because of EFFs using it, because they have a lot of they have a lot of bots, they have a lot of people on their social platforms who are incredibly active.
Yeah.
And so there are these two organizations using this one idea.
Yes.
It's interesting that it's trademarked and they've been told. So we'll see how that goes. But what kind of response has that slogan given, do you think, in terms of, you know, what is it yielding? Do people care about 94? Do the young people care about 94? They weren't there.
Yeah. Well, I think where it has resonance and traction is that people understand that 1994 is the birth of democracy in South Africa. And I think that everybody wants freedom, you know, freedom of movement, freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of opportunity. And I think that, you know, I think there was a Syrian playwright who wrote a terrible line, a very shocking and brilliant line, but a terrible one. He said, "As Syrians, we are condemned to hope." And I think that so many South Africans have been condemned to hope, waiting for the promise of 1994, waiting for the promise of Tutu's Rainbow Nation. And I think that what people are doing now is it's a renewal of that hope in an entirely fresh way for me. And I think that that's what people are gravitating around. And that's why I think so many people are plagiarizing it and passing it off as their own, because they've seen that it has real traction in society to say, it's possible again to change things. I think that's all it really does mean. And people are galvanized by that. Sadly, a lot of South Africans have given up hope. You know, when you look at the amount of people who are dormant voters or unregistered voters, sadly, apropos what we were saying earlier around people uniting around something, people remain divided. Let's see. Let's see how. I don't believe that. I'm not going to vote. I'm going to waste my vote. Well, actually, your grandparents and your parents fought damn hard for that vote. So don't stay at home. Use that vote. It's a gift. So I think it has traction, whether or not it's a sustaining, you know, living in a perpetual state of hope, that would be a tragedy, because that's not what the country needs. The country needs action. The country does need change. Sorry, does need positive change.
Okay, so here's the best comment so far of the morning, and it kind of ties together a lot of the things that you've been talking about. This is from Tracy, who's been listening. She says, "In the upcoming elections, never forget the only difference between a rat and a squirrel is marketing." So,
story.
Who is, from the little bit that you can glean so far, selling the right message? You mentioned Songezo, but are there others?
Well, firstly, I mean, my response to Tracy is that a rat lives in a gutter and a squirrel lives in an oak tree. And I think they're different places in which to spend your life, you know, whether you are scampering up a tall tree and jumping from trees to trees, or you're running through sewers, I think you get a slightly different outcome. So that is my response. Yes, they're both rodents, but there are differences. And I think that those are the differences we need to focus on, is not sewer politics and not gutter politics, but oak tree politics, in terms of being able to ascend, to elevate, to look at the bigger picture from a higher distance, say collectively, you know, and to build a forest, you know. And that's, to me, the thing that we need to do in this country. I do think that there is a massive opportunity for change if people would allow themselves to believe that and to do that. And we've got to see the rural vote. You know, I don't know what happened over Christmas when everybody went home and spent time with their parents and their grandparents and the conversations, because I think the hopes and aspirations of Black middle class South Africa are very different today to what they were 20 years ago. And I think that there's a vibrancy in our economy, and there's a wisdom, and there's a knowledge, and there's a passion for change. And hopefully those conversations elevate people who are feeling desperate or forlorn or have given up to actually do something this time. I think it'll be a tragedy to be caught or stuck and just to remain in that, you know, place of stasis, because you don't want, you don't believe change is possible. Change is always possible.
Well, that's a good place to leave that, but thank you. No, I think it's a good message, and I think it's one that we need to keep reinforcing, because it's very easy for people to slip into bad habits.
Yes.
It's like, I'll just have that one chocolate, or I'll just start becoming cynical and skeptical of everything.
Yeah, exactly right.
Good stuff. Thank you, Mike. It's good to see you, and thank you for coming to see us.
To be here. Thank you for having me.
Mike Able, everybody. The podcast is called Willing and Able. You can find it on all good podcast servers. And what are you going to be covering there?
So yesterday I had a brilliant entrepreneur, Gidon Novik.
Yes.
Some people know, you know, he started Kalula.com.
Exactly.
He's now got Lyft Airlines. I flew up to Josie yesterday on Lyft, great airline. He's got Home Suite Hotels, serial entrepreneur. Mm. He shares his entrepreneurial journey. Last week I had Mamukhai Makhlari, who is the executive chairman of Takealot.com Group, brilliant lady, chemical engineer turned entrepreneur. Songezo Zibi was a guest of mine, and he was talking about politics in South Africa. Nick Dreyer, who is he and his friend didn't know what to do with their lives, kind of stuck at mid-40s, decided to start Veldskoen, the brand. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's been this unbelievable global success. Got a lot of exciting guests coming up. I had David Cromer in the studio the other day. We had a really rich conversation about South African culture. Next week is Joanne Smolin. She's an executive coach. She uses a tool called Enneagram.
Yeah.
I had the most unbelievable entrepreneur lady called Ayanda, who's doing incredible things with her husband in terms of educating communities. And she's also a seed investor, and she's got an accounting firm. I had Bali and Thule. She's coming up as a guest, also talking about elections. So there's a whole host. A brilliant guy called Stephen Nathan is going to give financial advice, retirement advice, how to invest. So a wide variety of people that can, as we said earlier about Gareth, about wisdom, just a blanket of wisdom that I'm hoping, like manna, to drop on South Africa.
Yeah, I like it. Thank you, Mike.